As we continue to receive of your grace, I ask that the good word would find good soil, would lodge there and bring transformation. We praise you, God, for the power of your word. We praise you more for your presence in and amongst us. Amen. James chapter 3. Now, last week we had covered verses 1 through 12. And to be quite honest, some teachings, messages that I give, there are times where I'm hard-pressed to remember it a few days later. So if you ever felt bad about that, I guess I should feel doubly bad. And then there are some messages that linger. And, you know, it's not necessarily a condemnation factor. There's some meals that I eat that I forget an hour later. And then there's some meals I eat and I think about that, I go, man, I hope I get that again soon. That was excellent. And it's kind of like the word, but all those meals are important. The mundane ones, or the ones you don't remember, keep you alive to get you to the good ones. So it's all good. Why am I saying that? Because for some reason, I know you're going to find this strange, for some reason a teaching from last week on the tongue, or the big mouth as I put it, has seemed to linger in my heart. Did it linger in anybody else's heart and mind for a few days perhaps? Maybe like, yeah, that still is there. And so it's really, it was quite a message for me. It went deep, and I've had to pause at times to consider. I have not mastered it. And of course, James has already said in James chapter 3, in verse 2, for we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able to bridle his whole body or control life in general. And so he says it in a strange way, but basically nobody can perfect that matter. We're going to slip up with our words. And James is dealing with a community. He's dealing with the church. And there's no new thing. The most dangerous thing then and the most dangerous thing now is words, whether it be within a body where people are not being healthy with their communication, they're not speaking wholesome words, words of encouragement and life, whether it be outside of the community where heresies are floating and deceptive, destructive teachings are coming to assault the church. Words, communication is the most potent weapon that can overcome a person, overcome a group of people, overcome a relationship. It was the devil who communicated via words to Eve. And the domino effect, the fall of humanity ensued. And so this is no small matter. And I know we all have the sins that we think are the most abominable and tend to target those in our minds, maybe make ourselves feel good, but at least I don't do those things. Kind of like that Pharisee, you know, at least I don't, not like this tax collector. Not realizing that his abomination was worse and was a greater stench before God, that pride and that arrogance and that presumption. And so it's a big deal, and so James, just full force, 12 verses that we went through last week, just a full frontal assault on, hey, yeah, you can't be perfect in your communication. You're going to stumble, but you have to mitigate it. You have to rein it in, and God will help you with that. And so that was the teaching basically from last week. Now as we move along, we get a little bit more towards the heart of the matter. As Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so it's from within that defilement comes. And James kind of is going in reverse, if you will. He starts with the actions in chapter 2, faith without works is dead. faith without fruits or evidences, external signs of true faith. Then he hits words. Now he goes into the heart. And so he's working from the outside coming in. And we're only going to cover six verses this evening, James 3, 13 through 18. And it may not seem like a lot, but there's a whole lot of substance in what we're going to cover this evening. And I pray that just as perhaps from last week, the big mouth message might have lingered, may have caused you to pause at least and to think about what you're about to say, I hope this message also has an effect like that. James 3:13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Now, James is asking a question that basically says, who's got some spiritual quality? Who's got some maturity? Or to put it another way, what is the measure of your spiritual quality? How can it be assessed? So with that in mind, he answers it. Verse 13, who is wise and understanding? Who are the mature? Who are the, what we would say, the spiritual among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. Now in chapter 2, of course, faith without works is dead. And here we have a person that is wise and understanding, that has spiritual maturity. You know, show me somebody that has some spiritual worth. Show me somebody that has grown. They have these works that are done in the meekness of wisdom. Now, this isn't the first time that James has given us a way to understand spiritual maturity. Now, the way I grew up in the faith, it's kind of a mixed thing because I grew up in a tradition, if you will, or in a an orientation to Christianity, which is very transformative. That is, you grow, you go from glory to glory. It's all about progress and making great strides. But unfortunately, with that, there was, I think, one-dimensional views of spirituality, usually connected with the spirituals or the spiritual gifts in the Bible. So certain gifts or certain manifestations spoke to spiritual maturity. If a person could speak in a certain way, or if they exhibited a certain gift, usually loud, usually mysterious, then that person obviously had spiritual maturity. Forget the gift of helps, forget all the other more boring ones. And that's just kind of the way I came along. And hey, it's better to be progressive and to think in terms of growing in godliness than otherwise. So don't get me wrong, I prefer that. But James has been measuring or giving us descriptions of a spiritual person, and he's speaking to a community that could be led astray, that could follow counterfeit or false markers of spiritual progress. And so let me take you back by way of review. This is not the first time James has showed evidence of somebody that has some spiritual quality, some spiritual worth. In James chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, you may recall this. If anyone thinks he is religious, now this is not religious as some of us might think. It's a negative word, like tradition, ritual, religion. Those are almost like terrible words to progressive Christians, and it ought not to be. I understand it can be a dead religion. It can be a form of godliness without power. I understand that. But this is actually good. James 1:26. If anyone thinks he is religious, that is mature, has spiritual quality, has devotional value, and does not bridle his tongue, he's deceiving himself. But deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. And so a religion that has value, as I paraphrase verse 27, pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, to keep oneself unstained from the world. Now, these things might not be exhibited to the rest of the church. No one might see the giving that's going on, the benevolence, the keeping oneself pure. I'm not going to partake of that because I don't want to offend God. I don't want to defile myself. Might not seem like all that big of a deal, but to James, there is at least one measure of somebody that has this spiritual quality, somebody that could be emulated if they were to be shown or demonstrated to the larger church. Then in James 2:8, here was another measure of spirituality, or somebody with maturity, if you will. James 2:8, if you really fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You're doing well. Now, this is akin to the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 13, where with all of the exhibitionism, the Corinthians were celebrating a spirituality. Paul says, hey, love is what really matters. You can have the tongues of angels. You can give your body to be burned. But if you don't have love, what profit? It's nothing. And so James and him are in accord there that if you really want to fulfill God's heart, the royal law, the most important thing is obviously love. And then now we're back to where we started, James 3:13. Here is yet, he's a very wise teacher. He's trying to give different perspectives, different facets on the spirituality that actually matters. With that in mind, James 3:13, who is wise and understanding among you? No doubt in the church there were people that were vying for positions, for prestige. You may recall from our teaching a couple weeks ago, the issue of partiality was a big deal. And so there were those in the church that were wanting people of prestige, because if you got people of prestige, it can bless you and make you more prestigious. And so the rich man, you come to a good spot. The poor, you sit over there or sit below my feet. And so now James, well, who's actually the one that is a wise person? Who actually has understanding? Is it the one that can recite the Old Testament Hebrew word for word from the original language? Is it the one that speaks of great oratory? Who is the wise and understanding? Well, here's another way of seeing somebody that is that has spiritual quality, high spiritual quality, by his good conduct, that is lifestyle or his manner of being, his mode of life, the way he acts. So this would encompass his thoughts, as we're going to see, his words and his actions. By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. This is a person that has the wisdom of God, and they have meekness with it. A person that is wise in their own eyes or knowledgeable tends to be puffed up. And a person that has knowledge will celebrate that if they're not careful. And they will have the same spirit, ultimately, of the devil, who thought very highly of himself. He indeed was very talented, had great personal assets, and the tumble he took. My, how the mighty have fallen. But to have the wisdom of God, and then to keep a proper assessment, the meekness of wisdom. Meekness is basically a clear understanding of who you really are in the light of God. And, of course, Moses, a man of great spiritual worth, not a perfect man by any means, but a man to be emulated, a man that is a model of spiritual quality, surely the highest, most prestigious spiritual character in the Jewish mindset, Moses. Bible says of Moses that he was the meekest man of the earth. As a matter of fact, Moses said that of himself. True meekness can say that of oneself, because meekness is not merely, acting gently or trying to act out some soft mannerism. It's a proper assessment. I'm under a strong God. I have no power or authority but that which God gives me. Moses understood that about himself. So he understood that when people were coming against him, they weren't really coming against him. They were coming against God. And that's why he got a little concerned, because God was going to take up for Moses. And he had that meekness, very wise, and it's connected with that meekness. So this wise and understanding person that James speaks of, you'll know it because their conduct, their mannerisms are under this disposition, wisdom. They understand God. They try their best to understand themselves and to live in right relationship to God and with their fellow man. It's like Jesus. Jesus was a meek man. He come unto me, all you labor, heavy laden, I will give you rest, for I am meek and lowly. He could say that of himself, and there was absolutely no pretension in what he said. I am meek and lowly. And people beheld a man of great authority and power, not like the scribes. He had this authority, but at the same time, he's under his Father at all times. He's like he's got that horsepower, that strength, but it's harnessed in, and the rider can turn it and control it. Well, that's a great picture of meekness. Now, verses 14 through 17, which is the bulk of this teaching, speak of two different sources. How many of you have ever heard of outsourcing? It's like if you can't do something, you outsource it. And there's many specialties out there that you can outsource to. I mean, I really didn't want to help bring Hannah into the world, so we technically outsourced to Dr. Jones and Audrey Medical. And I think that was a good move. And so there's some outsourcing that people can criticize, maybe outsourcing of our manufacturing to China and such for short-term stock value gains, but long-term economic destruction. But however you might think of outsourcing, you've heard of outsourcing, but let's consider insourcing. Insourcing, what is your source? What are you drawing from day by day? Because what you take in, I mean, the old adage is that you are what you eat from your head down to your feet in a nutritional sense. What are you taking in to your soul day by day? What are you insourcing? To give a crude metaphor, one of my weaknesses is soda. I do like soda. There are very few things as bad for a person as soda. I mean, I'll quickly criticize a cigarette smoker, like, man, come on, don't you know any better? And yet I'm taking in something that's so toxic, basically, to the body. All that sugar and all that corrosiveness. You know, Coca-Cola drivers use the Coca-Cola to clean their engines. That's called a clue, by the way. Okay, so I try to moderate it, but to draw a comparison, soda versus water. Water is basically the nectar that God provided for the body. Pure water, good water, it's exactly what the body needs. And versus soda. And I will physically reap the consequences of what I drink more of. If I'm drinking a lot of soda and I always got this Pepsi with me, I always got, or Mountain Dew. I know there's no Mountain Dew addicts out there, but you know someone out there, of course. Always got my soda. You know, eventually that's going to start to manifest. Eventually, when my sugar goes out of whack and diabetic conditions come in and the cavities, I wonder why I got a cavity. Oh, I don't know. Must just be genetic. Could also be that you're taking down six of these a day. Eventually, that is going to manifest. Versus if I'm taking more water, there's the cleansing properties, the hydration value, and I'm sure Shelley Shaw could probably give more intelligent description of the water versus soda scenario. She's a nutritionist, right? Dietitian, all the above. Okay, but if you're whatever you're taking in more of, it's going to have consequences in your body. Now let's expand that as a metaphor, and this is what James shows. Now he shows two different sources, and every day we're going to make a choice as to what we're going to insource or take in. In 14 through 16, we've got the negative side, more of the soda. Tastes good. It's got that quick fix thing, but the end thereof, the fatigue factor of that is not good. Verse 14, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes from above. Now, we'll get to that in a moment. This is not what you should be insourcing. You're obviously not insourcing from the heavenly realm. Verse 15, this is not the wisdom that comes from above, but it's actually your source that you're partaking of, or the wisdom that you are manifesting is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For, you know, here's some evidence of that. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. Now, if I was to give a description of the world at large, of society, perhaps your workplace, do you think that verses 14 and 16 would fit? Bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. And then 16, jealousy, selfish ambition, and disorder that is chaos, confusion, and every vile practice. Do you think that's an apt description of our world in general? The universal side of agreement is a nod. Or you can say, yeah, that's better yet. That's how. Yeah. I mean, that is our world in general. And so it shows that this source, what is partaken of, eventually comes out of them. And so what is this wisdom? Well, there is the wisdom of the world, or the wisdom of man, and then there is the wisdom of God. The Apostle Paul actually makes that distinction. And so I want to show you this real quick before we come back here. So just hold your place. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, he delineates between two different wisdoms, or two different knowledge bases, or as I'm talking about, two different sources. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, and verse number 5, he says, that your faith may not rest in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Yet among the mature, now this is like what James is talking about, the wise, the complete. Yet among the mature, we do impart wisdom, although it is not a wisdom of this age or of this world, or of the rulers of this age who are doomed to pass away, or the wisdom that the politicians demonstrate. It's basically what he's saying. It's not what you see with all your political rulers. They seem like they're sophisticated. They seem like they're intelligent, but it's not the wisdom of God. So let me read that again, verse 6. Yet among the mature, we impart wisdom, although it's not a wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age who are doomed to pass away. But we impart a secret and hidden wisdom of God, which God decreed before the ages for our glory. So there's the wisdom of the world, the way the world operates, basically, the way the world interprets and the way the world acts. And then there is a secret or a superior wisdom, a wisdom that is of God. So Paul makes this distinction. Now back to James. Let us read these verses with that in mind. James 2:14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambitions in your heart, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not of God. This God is not the source of this, or this is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but it is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. So let's consider this threefold description of this negative wisdom. First of all, earthly. It has to do with the temporary. Everything is about the here and now. The earth is a place of time and scarcity and limitation. There's only so much time, only so many resources. And so it's all about the temporary. It's all about what can I get right now. And then unspiritual is actually a very interesting word. It's obvious. It's not of the spirit or of God's ways. It's from the Greek word psychikos, So psychological, psycho. I kind of just put down here psychotic, psychopath. It is not anything to do with God, but has everything to do with the way a person understands things. And so when we think of a psychotic or a psychopath, we think of some crazy, you know, mass murderer. Indeed, they are. But also, there's a much more mundane understanding of it. That is, if we are not receiving from God his wisdom, there's a psychotic side to us. That is a strong self-worship. I mean, if you think about it, these psychopathic people that commit the crimes, they're so concerned about their own desires that victims are nothing to them. And so I've got to have my way. And so they go out and they covet, they desire, they consume, yet it doesn't satisfy. Well, that is like perhaps the worst case scenario of that, but that's the way the average person operates without God. It is all about my psycho needs. And so they're like miniature psychopaths. That's how people of the worldly wisdom operate. Earthly, everything is here and now. Unspiritual, or another version says sensual. That is only what I can taste, touch, hear, see, and smell. That's the only thing that matters. Anything beyond that is irrelevant. Accountability, long-term consequences, the judgment seat of Christ, irrelevant. It's only the unspiritual. And then the final one here, if that wasn't bad enough, you know, I just said, you know, apart from God, we're a bunch of psychopaths, we're a bunch of sociopaths, it's all about me, who cares who I victimize? Well, then it says here in verse number 15 that this wisdom is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. So basically, people operate as the demons do. The demons are unregenerate. The demons are hopeless, helpless, and hell was created by God as a special place for the devil and his angels. That is their destiny, isolation from God. They hate God now, and they do everything they can to bring damage to God's kingdom now. They're so self-absorbed and self-consumed. This is the way demons operate. And this certainly isn't biblical, but you kind of get a little sense of that if you read the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, these demons and their twisted ways of thinking and understanding, and everything is about consuming and how much damage can we do. And so this is the way of the world. And for us, we might say, well, I'm glad that I'm not like that. Well, hold on a second. If you're insourcing the wisdom of the world, that is, if you're living off the media, if you're living off of talk radio, if you're living off of what your unsaved mother-in-law says, if you're just living off of the world, you're insourcing the world. It's what the guys say in the job, and then it's on Facebook, and I'm just constantly insourcing earthly wisdom, unspiritual wisdom. You know, it might not even be inherently bad. You might say, well, what's wrong with talking about, you know, what's wrong with talking about the football game? What's wrong with just, you know, talking about our home renovations? And if that's all you're insourcing, if you're not insourcing from above, insourcing about eternity, then you will be somebody. Now look at this. This is the evidence of it. You're going to be somebody that has selfish ambition and bitter jealousy. You're going to tend to be jealous. You're going to tend to compare yourself. You're not going to be content with what you have. You're going to say, well, why did they get this? All you parents and grandparents know this. You know, kids, if there's more than one kid, they're analyzing. Why did they get more? You know, how are you measuring that? You're able to measure out ounces in your mind? How do you know that's more? They're always jealousy. Oh, they did this last time, and how do you remember all these things? I mean, man, it's strange. They can't remember to clean their room, but they can remember everything that the other one's done going way back. You didn't punish them this way. Selfish ambition, jealousy. And, yeah, it's funny with kids, but it isn't funny to God with his kids. God looks at me and God looks at us, and he can tell right away what we're insourcing. If we tend to insource the soda pop of the world, we're taking in all the basically the idleness or the outright wickedness of the world, then of course we're going to be bitterly jealous. We're going to tend to jealousy, tend to suspicion, tend to always viewing through the green-eyed monster, envy, always looking at things that way. And then selfish ambition. It's about me and my growth, me and my expression. It's about me and singing my solo on Sunday so everybody can look at me. Now you can see how this comes into a church, can you not? A church can, and this is James' perspective here. Yes, he's talking to individuals about what's going on in their heart. He's also talking about a community, which can become consumed with this selfish ambition and jealousy. You know, it's a sad thing when a church becomes a political place and people are vying for positions and there's votes and you're candidating, and how sick and twisted. It's just like the world. That's obviously a group of people which is insourcing more of the wisdom that exists down here than the wisdom that descends from above. And then, you know, it's like bracketed with evidence here. Verse 14, here's evidence that you're insourcing from 15. And then 16, here's evidence. Look at this. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, it's like the floodgates of hell open up. The enemy has a green light to come in here and wreak havoc. When I am jealous, just bent on comparison, discontented, tending towards malcontentedness, and when it's selfish ambition, it's about my comfort zone, it's about, you know, everything that will accentuate my life, selfish ambition, when that characterizes a person or a marriage or a family or a church family, when this is what's happening, then look what it says here in verse 16. There will be disorder in every vile practice. There's like no bottom. Who knows what's going to come out of that matter? You know, we don't, and there's multitude of examples of vile practices, no doubt. But basically, when a person is insourcing, when a family is insourcing, you know, when you got 180 channels insourcing, 8 hours a day insourcing of TV and teenage sitcoms, when your kids are just taking in, insourcing, oh, it's just harmless fun. They're just, oh, isn't that funny? Yeah, they're dating, yeah, that was just great. No, when they're insourcing all of this stuff, then it isn't going to be a surprise. There's disorder, confusion, the enemy comes in like a flood, and then every evil practice. Wow, I didn't know that person was going in that direction. Who would have ever guessed that they'd go down that path? Who would have ever guessed that they would rip off their job like that or leave their wife and go with that woman? Who would have ever guessed? Well, it probably wouldn't take much guesswork if you knew how much they were insourcing this wisdom, drinking the soda of the world, and at the end of the day, spiritually decrepit. That's the negative side. Here's the positive side, verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above. Now this is special. Great description here. Is first pure, then peaceable, then gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial, and sincere. Now, you can tell where the wisdom of the world is operating. Because people are all about themselves, and they're jealous, and they will fight to maintain their status, to keep themselves secure. Their insecurities will rule their life. Their insidious insecurity, which is another version of pride, will make life miserable for them and everybody around them. But you can also tell where the wisdom of God is operating. You can tell who is drinking the water of life. The well of God himself may not be as sweet, may not have that nice flashy color and the bubbles going on, But look what's going on here. First of all, they're pure. Now, this purity here ultimately is found in Jesus Christ. How can a person be pure? They have to be purified by God himself. Just as in the old covenant, the priest had to purify by blood, and then the people had to be purified by blood, by sacrifice. Jesus Christ is our Passover. He's our sacrifice. This is the first thing, purity. Once a person is purified by God, then they can be empowered by God. So purity is the doorway into all the rest of these characteristics. Now pay close attention here. This is important stuff. I want to spare you years of damage. I want to spare the collateral damage upon your children. Love to spare the church from any of the negative directions we could go in. Purity first, and then now let's consider the wisdom. Peaceable. Now, a people given to peace. In the Old Testament, the greatest description of peace is found in the Hebrew word. Does anybody know it, by the way? Shalom. Shalom is not the absence of conflict. You see, shalom speaks to health, wholeness, and a general sense of well-being. As a matter of fact, to be a healthy person, you almost have to bring conflict to your body from time to time in the form of exercise, in the form of denying things which will actually pollute you. And so this peaceable characteristic is where there's some health, where there's a person that has a wellness and a wholeness about them, a very comprehensive view, not just the absence of conflict, not just, well, smooth sailing waters and no waves, so obviously we've got peace here. That is a version of peace, but it's not the full peace of God. So purity, and then when you're drinking of God, when you're insourcing of God and the heavenly wisdom, there's going to be health. And that's what I pray for a church family. I pray for a healthy church family. And sometimes to get healthy, you have to extricate or remove things. Sometimes you have to add things. I remember when I was growing up and you were watching the Little Rascals. I did, I guess, in my generation. And they had this stuff called castor oil. And I guess it was nasty. I never had it. But apparently it was to bring health back or to help in some way. I don't know if it was just snake oil or what it was. But sometimes you got to add things to the body, which actually might not be too sweet and pleasant to bring back a state of health. And so this peaceableness, I'm open to be healthy. I want to be healthy. And so, of course, you know, peace, that means I'm going to make things right with people when things go bad. That means sometimes we have to confront things so there can be true peace, not the Chamberlain version of peace, which comes back from meeting with Hitler and says peace in our times. When Hitler breaks every single agreement he ever makes, that's not peace. No, peace is, from God's perspective, is what can I do, what can I be, what can I add, what can I remove so that I can actually be healthy. I want to be whole. I'm pure. I'm legally made right from God, from the work of Jesus. Now there's this peaceable issue. And then the next one is very good too. Gentle. A person that is drinking from the source of wisdom that is God, they're going to tend to be more of a gentle person. You know, men are to be gentlemen. They should treat their ladies right. They should open the door for them. Oh, wait, Jennifer's in here. Okay. They should be gentle. And are you a gentle person? Well, if you're getting close to God, the things that you would spaz out about usually, the things that you would overreact to, the closer you get to God, the more gentle, because you put things in context. You say, hey, okay, you know, where I would react harshly to somebody who did that to me, God kind of reminds you, well, you know, you've done things like that in your past, and you've offended me many times, so maybe I don't have to react like an animal would. Maybe I could respond as a responsible person in more of a gentle way. Maybe I can communicate instead of trying to destroy someone in my mind or by words. And so in this context, a person or a family that is insourcing God, they're going to tend to be more gentle than not. And then my favorite one, And God help me. It's my favorite one because it's the one I need the most from my perspective. Open to reason. This is such a great term. It's eupithes in the original language. It means to be reasonable or to be willing to yield. And I would like at the end of my days, and you know, hopefully they're farther off because I need some more time in this matter, but at the end of my days where those who know me most could say, you know, he is a reasonable guy. You could talk to him. You know, he might flare up. He might overreact at times, but he was at least reasonable or willing to yield or flexible. He could give in. He could be reasoned with. Did you know? Now, I don't. If you got a heart issue, you might want to be careful in hearing this, so I'm prepping you. Did you know that there's a lot of unreasonable people in this world? I mean, people that are like 40, 50, 60 that you would think would know better by now, totally unreasonable, totally childish. I mean, everything is just so misconstrued, and it's a terrible thing. You know, often enough, I deal with couples, and one of the most common issues in a couple relationship is that one or both of them are unreasonable. You can't talk. You know, they kind of break down, or they throw a fit, or they go inward, and there's no reasoning. You know, it's like in Isaiah, God says, come, let us reason together. We're made in the image of God. You got a mind. It can work. You can actually think. You don't have to shut down. You don't have to just fall apart. But if you're drinking just of the world, you're going to fall apart because everything is about you. It is an all or nothing situation. And if I'm not taken, and my position is not seen as golden and gospel, then hey, unreasonable. I'm going to fall apart. But for a person that's taken in of God, it's, hey, there are errors in me. They're like the psalmist. See if there be any wicked way in me. You know, transform me. I'm open. I'm reasonable. I realize that I'm not where I once was, but I'm not where I yet want to be. That is a reasonable, flexible person. A person that is willing to yield. They don't start with the mindset that it's all or nothing. It's I win and at all costs. If I don't win, then this is a total disaster. Instead of considering that maybe there's a win-win situation. Maybe there's a, hey, how about if I surrender? How about if I give in to the situation? I'm not talking about compromise to sin or fundamental things, but sometimes if I will just be flexible, sometimes like Jesus, if I will give, if I will lay myself down, a greater good might come about. And so this is a big matter as we consider these aspects of the person taking heavenly wisdom in. Pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, or open to reason, as my version says. And then going on here in verse 17, a person that is full of mercy and good fruits. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. How fast do you give out mercy? Because that's the way it'll come back to you. If you're fast to criticize, if you're fast to ostracize, if you're fast to just consign people to certain categories and judge them, that's not being merciful. But to the merciful, God will show himself merciful. And so this person that is taking in God's wisdom, they're going to tend to give mercy out. Are they going to let people get away with murder? No, it's not about that kind of foolishness. Does that mean that the kid's going to have the run of the house and I got to be merciful at all times and never discipline? No, that's foolish. But there is a mercy which comes from the Spirit of God that can be given and can be a blessing. And then good fruits, easy enough. Finally here, verse 17, this wisdom that's from above also is impartial and sincere. And of course, we dealt with the partiality issue back in chapter 2, so James is emphasizing that once again. And then there's a sincerity or there's a lack of hypocrisy. Now, we're all hypocritical in certain ways. I once gave a message on hypocrisy. And then at the end of the message, the altar call was, all the hypocrites can come down, and we're going to pray. And the point was we all should come down, because none of us are 100% consistent. The person, however, that is tasting and seeing that the Lord is good, the They're reading their Bible. They're praying every day. They're in these gatherings so they can enjoy the well that God has. There's going to be more of a consistency, less hypocrisy, more reality. James ends with a proverb that he basically comes up with by the Spirit in verse 18. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And this is really a huge matter as James goes in this letter and continues on. James is trying to speak peace to this church where there is no doubt at times discord, harsh judgment, competition. These things have always been, always will be, even in a family of God. You know, you've probably heard it before. If you're looking for that perfect church, don't go to it because the moment you get there, you'll ruin it. There's always going to be the struggles and the strife and discord from time to time. But a person and people that are taking the wisdom from above, they're going to experience a wonderful harvest. In the long run, they have sown peace, they make peace, they sow peace, they're kind, they're tender-hearted, they try to give others the benefit of the doubt, just like they would desire. They're flexible, open to reason, tending to be gentle. They're sowing in peace. These peacemakers plant seeds of peace, and then they experience the wonderful marriage. They experience their children rising up and calling them blessed. They experience a church family where there is a health and an undeniable authenticity that only God can bring. This is that harvest of righteousness. Let me close with a couple thoughts. As I said earlier, there are clearly two sources of wisdom. Which one am I ensourcing? Which one are you ensourcing? I would provoke us today to consider, how much am I taking in from the world versus how much am I taking in from God? And then secondly, we got here, actually, if you ever want to do a heart check or a house check, examine my heart, or examine my house. Might be my relationship with my spouse, my family, relationships of brothers and sisters, relationships in the church family. We can analyze and see just what source people are tending to partake of. And James makes it very clear. I'll finish just with a review. A heart and a house that is filled with bitter jealousy, selfish ambition, that is allowing disorder and every vile practice, there is no doubt about it, they are drinking from the toxic well of the world. And what they take in is going to come out. But a heart and a house which is taking the living water, which is drinking in the wisdom of God, then there's going to be a harvest of righteousness. There's going to tend to be peace, gentleness, a reasonableness, a flexibility, a willingness to yield, and lacking partiality, lacking hypocrisy, and good things come forth. And so I think it's just a great passage from time to time. I know the first half of this chapter, or the first two-thirds of this chapter about the big mouth are strong, but that's another great analysis to do from time to time. What am I insourcing? And so I'll finish with that. Let me pray, and then we'll see if there's anything that you may have to say. Lord, I just pray that you'd help us as we consider your word, and your Holy Spirit's considering us. Your Holy Spirit's going to deep places, and we thank you for conviction of sin, righteousness, and judgment. Help me and help us as a family to be partaking of the wisdom that comes from you, O God, and seeing those manifestations. Forgive us, O Lord God, if we have been intoxicated and overcome with the wisdom of this world, and then we wonder why we're so consumed with ourselves, why we're so discontented, why there seems to be chaos and lack of clarity. Forgive us, O Lord. May we take our time day by day to receive from you. Thank you, Lord. Amen.